It's a question that every good mother and good father asks when a child of theirs goes astray. They might not verbalize the question, but at the very least, they think about it. They think about it constantly. It normally causes them to experience a great deal of anxiety. Will they ever change? That's the question. Will they ever change? In other words, will my son, will my daughter ever become a good person again? The kind of person they used to be. The kind of person I raised them to be. I'm sure that question is in the minds of some of the mothers and fathers in this church right now. Now the tendency is to jump the gun and immediately to say or think, no, they'll never be any different. They'll never change for the better. Even though I desperately want them to, even though I'm praying every day that they will. Maybe that's because we live in a very cynical age of human history, where most people, maybe not most, but many people have the attitude that, as the old saying goes, a leper doesn't change his spots, or her spots, as the case might be. So we tend to be suspicious of anybody who claims to have changed their life in a positive way. We think to ourselves, well, sooner or later, we'll find out about the skeletons in their closet. It's just a matter of time. If a baseball player, for example, tests positive for steroids at some point in his career, and then goes on to hit 50 home runs the next season, you can bet that most fans will doubt that he did it legitimately, even if he takes several drug tests during the course of the year and passes them all. He might have changed his ways, for sure. The first inclination of most people is to doubt it. This tendency towards skepticism, of course, is not peculiar to our generation or our culture. To some extent, I think it's always been present ever since Adam and Eve sinned in the Garden of Eden at the beginning of human history. It was even present in the early church. As we heard a few moments ago in our reading from Acts chapter 9, listen again to the opening words of that passage. It says, when Saul arrived in Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he was a disciple. Imagine, those of you who were alive back then, imagine that someone had told you back in 2002 or 2003 that Osama bin Laden had all of a sudden become a big supporter and friend of the United States. Would you have believed it? That's precisely the kind of thing these early Christians were being asked to believe about Saul of Tarsus. Remember, this was the guy who had been an accomplice in the death of St. Stephen, the first martyr. This was a man who probably had arrested some of the relatives and friends of these early Christians and thrown them into jail. This was the man who only recently, as the Bible puts it, was breathing murderous threats against the church. Now you expect us to believe that he's a Christian? You expect us to believe that he's Joe Super Christian? You expect us to welcome this man with open arms? We don't think so. He's probably just trying to get into one of our Sunday masses so that he can arrest the whole congregation. In all likelihood, that was the initial reaction these Christians in Jerusalem had when they heard that their old nemesis was in town. But Saul had changed. With the help of Barnabas, and with the help of Barnabas, he and the apostles and the rest of the Christian community eventually came to recognize that fact. So positive change is possible. It's always possible. Even if your children have severed themselves from the vine, Jesus Christ, to use the image of today's gospel, they can always get grafted back on to the vine. Most of us know the story of St. Augustine, who went from hedonist to saint after his mother Monica prayed for 30 plus years for his conversion. She no doubt had very thick calluses on her knees. It's another well-known example of somebody who changed for the better in a very radical way. But the great thing is, my brothers and sisters, for every famous conversion story, like that of St. Paul or St. Augustine, there are literally thousands of unknown ones which are just as real. will never be written up in any book, that's for sure. But they're every bit as genuine. Perhaps some of you have a story of your own in that regard. Let me close now by sharing with you three signs, three visible signs which indicate that a true conversion has in all likelihood taken place. I mention these today because they were all present in Saul of Tarsus after he met Jesus on the road to Damascus 2,000 years ago. Moms and dads in the congregation, these are signs to look for in your child which will indicate that your prayers are working, that your child either has changed or is changing or is on the verge of changing for the better. Sign number one, new friends. It's very hard to change your life in a positive way if you continue to hang around with the people who encouraged you and supported you in your old life of sin. You need new friends to encourage you and support you in your new life of virtue. In 1 Corinthians 15, St. Paul wrote these words, "Bad company corrupts good morals." That was something he probably knew from his own experience. Needless to say, in his days as a Pharisee, Saul of Tarsus would not have been best buddies with somebody like Barnabas. But after he came to Christ and was baptized, Barnabas became one of his closest friends, one of his closest allies, as we heard in that first reading. So moms and dads, if you're praying for your children to change, start by praying that they get some better friends. Virtuous friends can make an incredible difference. I've seen that happen over and over and over again in my 38 years of priesthood, in my ministry to teenagers. Get good teenagers connected with one another, they keep each other on the right track. Sign number two of a change, an honest assessment of the past. It's another important indicator of positive change. When a person can sincerely acknowledge the evil of their pre-conversion life, their evil pre-conversion behavior. There are examples and signs of this in the writings of St. Paul, none of which is more powerful than this line from 1 Timothy chapter 1, where Paul says of himself, "I was once a blasphemer, a persecutor, a man filled with arrogance." Paul didn't try to excuse or whitewash the sins of his past life. He was completely honest about everything he had done. Moms and dads, if you don't encounter that same kind of honesty, that same kind of brutal honesty in your son or daughter, chances are they haven't changed, even if they insist they have. And finally, sign number three, a recognition of the need to remain vigilant, lest they fall back into their old ways. If a person says to you, "Oh, I'm different now. I'll never be tempted. I won't even ever be tempted to do that kind of bad stuff again." They say that, watch out. That's a clear sign of pride. And as it says in Proverbs 16:18, pride precedes a fall. Those who have really changed for the better understand their own weakness and the need that they have to be vigilant over their thoughts, words, and actions. As the old act of contrition says, they know they need to avoid the near occasion of sin. St. Paul expressed this attitude in 1 Corinthians 9:27 when he wrote, "What I do is discipline my own body and master it for fear that after having preached to others, I myself should be rejected." St. Paul was not a prideful fool. That's one of the biggest reasons why his change, positive change, lasted. The final paragraph of today's first reading says, "The church throughout all Judea, Galilee, and Samaria was at peace. It was being built up and walked in the fear of the Lord. With the consolation of the Holy Spirit, it grew in numbers." It grew in numbers for one very simple reason. Because an awful lot of people changed their lives for the better. So take heart, worried mothers and fathers. If it happened all those years ago for those early Christian converts, it can happen once again today for your wayward children.